Good evening. You are listening to KKRN Bella Vista, 88.5 FM in Round Mountain. My name is Tom Diskin, and I'll be your host for the next 2 hours. Coming up next is Intermountain Classics, our local weekly classical music program. Every Saturday from 5 to 7 p.m., Intermountain Classics features local artists and musicians with live broadcasts and interviews, as well as fine recorded music and commentary. And remember, you can comment on the show or request your favorite music by contacting me at imclassics@kkrn.org. That's imclassics@kkrn.org. Every so often, I replay one of the past programs of Intermountain Classics to commemorate a special occasion. Last weekend, the North State Symphony had its Melodic Attraction Concert, featuring guest soloist Andrew Swords playing the beautiful Sibelius Violin Concerto. North State Symphony has featured several violin soloists in the past, including Lindsay Deutsch last year and concertmaster Terry Bond in 2012. Tonight, Intermountain Classics presents a special tribute to North State Symphony and its love for the violin in a program of past programs featuring the violin. At the beginning of the program tonight, you heard Lindsay Deutsch playing Gershwin's Bess, You Is My Woman Now from the opera Porgy and Bess. During tonight's show, we will also hear a track from Andrew Sword's newest CD release, Transcendence, and a replaying of Terry Bond's interview from the November 2012 concert, talking about her performance of the Berg Violin Concerto, written to the memory of an angel. So stay tuned for this very exciting program, tonight and every Saturday night, for your favorite classical music right here on KKRN. And if you miss a program or you would like to hear it again, all 2016 shows are now archived on the KKRN website at kkrn.org. These shows are all available for immediate listening. Simply go to the Intermountain Classics section of the website and look for the show you want to hear. Each show is available for immediate playback. And if you haven't done so already, please consider liking Intermountain Classics on Facebook. One of the features of Intermountain Classics is to announce upcoming local concerts, plays, and other cultural attractions in the Redding and Shasta County area. Here are this week's offerings. The Watoto African Children's Choir will perform tomorrow, Sunday, March 6th, at 6:30 p.m. at St. James Lutheran Church, 2500 Shastaview Boulevard in Redding. Admission is free. Piano Voce, or Voce, the piano duo of Nancy Carell and Annette Gurney, returns to Reading for another innovative and melodic evening of keyboard music and song. The duo team will play four-hand piano music of Dvorak and Debussy, and later in the program will be joined by baritone Carl McGahan, who will perform the love songs of Vaughan Williams' House of Life and the chilling dirges of Kurt Weill's Four Songs of Walt Whitman. The concert will be held at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, March 11th, 2016, at Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2850 Foothill Boulevard in Reading. Admission is free and contributions are gratefully accepted. Duane Hampton presents Piano Artists in Concert, an evening of masterful piano performances, on Saturday, March 12th at 7:30 p.m. This will be Duane Hampton's 11th and final benefit concert at the Cascade Theater. The concert features exuberant performances by world-class piano artists and composers, all who have studied with Duane Hampton. Hampton is an internationally renowned pianist, Steinway artist, composer, and master teacher, who brings these talented musicians together from all over the world for one evening each year. Returning favorites will include Kevin Woodruff, Vito D'Ora, Nathaniel Bell, Sophia Hackler, and Alan Knight. Also performing is Tyler Bredo, Joseph Hicks, and Mark Cohen. For tickets or more information, call the Cascade Theater box office at 530-243-8877 or go to cascadetheater.org. The Riverfront Playhouse presents Our Town, a play by Thornton Wilder, which tells the story of the fictional American small town of Grover's Corners between 1901 and 1913 through the everyday lives of its citizens. Performances will open on March 12th and run weekends through April 9th at the Riverfront Playhouse, 1620 East Cypress Avenue in Reading. Performance times are at 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday evenings and Sundays at 2 p.m. Tickets may be obtained through the Cascade Theater box office at 530-243-8877 or by going to cascadetheater.org. For more information, go to riverfrontplayhouse.net. The Shasta College Art Department and the O Street Gallery in downtown Reading come together to form a special exhibition of artworks by the Shasta College art students, now ongoing through March 18th. This exhibition highlights the creativity of the art students at Shasta College, as well as the quality and energy of the art department's programs. The O Street Gallery is located upstairs from the Oregon Street Antique Mall at 1261 Oregon Street in Reading. This spring, Shasta College is producing the classic comedy As You Like It by William Shakespeare. As You Like It follows its heroine, Rosalind, as she flees persecution in her uncle's court, accompanied by her cousin Celia to find safety and eventually love in the Forest of Arden. Performance dates are March 10th through 13th and March 17th, 18th, and 19th at Shasta College Theater. All shows start at 7 p.m. except the 13th at 2 p.m. For more information, call 242-2369 or visit shastacollege.edu/theater.
Thank you.
Good evening and welcome to Intermountain Classics. I'm your host, Tom Diskin. Tonight I am showcasing some of the most beautiful music for the violin ever written, and in particular, featuring soloists who have performed with our own North State Symphony over the past few years. We've just heard Luna's song from the newly released Transcendence CD by contemporary composer Sean Christopher. The violin soloist in this recording was Andrew Swords, who just this past weekend was in Reading and Chico playing the Sibelius Violin Concerto at North State Symphony's Melodic Attraction Concerts. Well, back in 2012, North State Symphony Concertmaster Terry Bond appeared on Intermountain Classics talking about her life, her music, and in particular the Violin Concerto by Alban Berg that she performed with the orchestra on November 11th and 12th of that year. To commemorate this celebration of North State Symphony and its love for the violin, I am pleased to repeat this interview for your listening enjoyment. Well, this evening we have a special guest on Intermountain Classics, Terry Bond. Terry is a violinist, concertmaster of the Eureka Symphony, concertmaster of the North State Symphony, and co-concertmaster of the Oakland East Bay Symphony. She is also a member of the new music ensemble Earplay, based in San Francisco, and associate director of the Humboldt Chamber Music Workshop. Ms. Bond's professional experience includes concertmaster positions with the Fresno Philharmonic, the Santa Cruz County Symphony, and the Rohnert Park Symphony, as well as 4 years as a member of the National Symphony Orchestra of Washington, D.C., and 2 years as a member of the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra of New Zealand, where she participated in the Wellington International Festival of the Arts and toured the North Island with the Gabrielli Trio, a Radio New Zealand national ensemble. For over 20 years, Miss Bond was the concertmaster of the Women's Philharmonic, during which time she premiered hundreds of works and recorded the Violin Concerto No. 5 by Maddalena Lombardini with the orchestra. Ms. Bond has a Bachelor of Music degree from the Oberlin Conservatory of Music and attended music festivals in Aspen and Taos as a student. She won the Oberlin Concerto competition and received the Marin Symphony Association Award. Welcome to Intermountain Classics, Terry.
Well, thank you, Tom.
You have quite an impressive musical history, and you have played in so many different places, including all over California, Washington, D.C., and even New Zealand. Can you tell us how your musical career evolved and took you to so many different places?
Well, my first job was with the National Symphony, National Symphony Orchestra in Washington. I was lucky enough to get that audition straight out of school. I had just gotten my bachelor's degree, and in that summer they were actually expanding the size of the National Symphony. They were adding a stand to each string section, so there were, in fact, 15 new people that year that came in. We had this sort of little crowd of our own. But I found after several years that one of the things that I really love about being a musician is the variety of things that we can do. And I found that the 52-week-a-year job in the National Symphony playing pretty conservative repertoire for the most part was not really working for me. I really craved a little more variety. Met my husband in the orchestra. He's a violist, and he was there when I got there. So we kind of got married, and I dragged him out back to California where we had both come from. So then we started to work as freelance musicians in the San Francisco area. And so that's really what leads to that long litany of jobs of mine is being a freelance musician and usually juggling 4 or 5 jobs at a time.
Well, it sounds like you were in the right place at the right time for that symphony position.
Yeah, I definitely was. And I'm very grateful to have had that symphony position. It enabled me to buy a violin through the orchestra's instrument loan fund. I learned a lot of repertoire. I'm very grateful to have done it, but I'm also very grateful not to have done it nonstop for the last 30 years.
And happy to be back in California,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Happy to be back in California.
That's great. Well, we're very fortunate to have you here in the Redding-Chico area. How did you happen to become involved with the North State Symphony?
Again, kind of timing worked well for that for me. As you mentioned, I was concertmaster of the Women's Philharmonic in San Francisco for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that orchestra essentially ran out of money, as orchestras often do. In about 2000, 2001. So just as the North State Symphony was being formed, I was starting to look for some work to replace the mm-hmm. Women's Philharmonic with. And I got a call from the manager of the orchestra. They, as generally happens, they wanted to try several people out in the concertmaster chair. So I did one set with the orchestra and Kyle, and other people did as well. And we seemed to be a good fit. I thought Kyle was a wonderful conductor the first time I saw him, and I still think so. Happily, he likes my work as well. So we've been working together from 2001 now. It's been a while.
Wow, that's really great. So the orchestra originally started in, what, 2000, 2001?
Yeah, I'm terrible with that kind of date, so I hesitate to commit myself to a particular year. Mm-hmm. It was somewhere right around in there. I mean, I remember that my first set with the orchestra was right after 9/11, the original 2001 9/11, because I remember having the discussion about whether, in fact, it was appropriate for the concert to take place. So that's that. My involvement with the orchestra dates back to September of 2001. And I'm not sure when it's a fascinating situation, really. The North State Symphony is a merger of the Chico State Symphony and the Redding Symphony, which was a community-based orchestra. And the North State Symphony gets some of its income and support through the Chico State University Foundation, and much of it from people in Redding and Red Bluff. And they have a board of directors, as well as oversight from the faculty and administration of Chico. So it's quite a conglomeration of interests, really, that put it together. And when I first heard about that, I was a little skeptical. I thought, how long are these people all going to be able to get along with each other? And I've been really excited to see how well it's worked, and everyone has gotten along with each other. And so, I mean, one of the things I really like about being in North State is that it is very much an orchestra that's in its communities and that feels committed to the whole North State area. I think we've played by now in at least 9 or 10 different locales. Mm-hmm. I won't say cities because some of them are not.
I know that North State plays in both Redding and Chico, and sometimes in Red Bluff. Isn't that true?
Yep, that's true. And we've played in Oroville, and we've played in Anderson, and we've actually played a lot of smaller towns as well.
That's great. And the orchestra does chamber concerts as well as full symphony concerts.
That's right, yeah. We do usually one actual chamber, small concert in October, and then we've been doing one larger chamber ensemble concert with anywhere from 7 to 15 people playing and with Kyle conducting.
And you've also done something, I believe, called the Mozart Mile. What is that?
The Mozart Mile, yeah. It's I have to tell you, I've actually not experienced firsthand the Mozart Mile since I don't live in Chico. I'm not there except when we're rehearsing most of the time, and the Mozart Mile usually fits in between our rehearsals. But it's a fun thing. It's it's a run, or it's a fun run. The symphony parks musicians along the route at different places. So as you run or jog or walk or stroll, whatever you want to do, you hear music every so often. I understand there's even, I think there's a ballet company that gives you a little dancing to look at while you're jogging.
Oh my,
wow. Yeah, it's very eclectic, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a major fundraiser for the...
That sounds like a very interesting activity. Well, thank you for that. It's North State has certainly been in this area for some time, and it's very, very popular. I think all the concerts are very well attended. So,
right. Yeah. We really enjoy playing in both our venues, but I got to say, particularly the Cascade Theater. The Cascade is a great place to enjoy any kind of music. I mean, it's great for all kinds of music, but it's really good acoustically for symphony orchestra.
Oh yes, it's a wonderful auditorium, and it's certainly very well used in the Reading area.
Yes, it is. So. In fact, we used to do our Friday night dress rehearsals there when we had Saturday night concerts, and we really can't do that anymore because the hall is so well, it's booked mm-hmm. so far in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. Well, thank you. Well, I see you've brought your violin with you today. Would you like to play something for us?
Oh, sure. I think I'll play a little bit of Telemann. Telemann wrote 12 fantasias for solo violin, which are full of nice little pieces. I'm going to play a Sicilienne. Actually, you're going to hear a little tuning first.
Thank you, Terry. That was really beautiful. That's and that was Telemann?
That was Telemann. I believe he's Georg Philipp Telemann.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Nice. Well, thank you very much. Well, now, this next weekend, November 10th and 11th, you're going to be performing the Alban Berg Concerto for violin with the North State Symphony. And that's Saturday, November 10th in Chico, and Sunday the 11th in Reading. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, it'll be a Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. concert in Reading.
Can you tell us something about the composer and the concerto?
I'd love to. I fell in love with this piece when I was 17, when I was a freshman at Oberlin Conservatory, and one of the upperclassmen in my studio class was playing it, and in fact... won the competition, the concerto competition with it at school, and played it with the school orchestra. And I've been kind of fascinated by the piece ever since. Alban Berg was Austrian. He lived in Vienna. He came from a family that was kind of land rich and cash poor, you might say. His family was actually, they were upper class, but they were at the point where they didn't really have much actual money anymore, but they had apartments in Vienna that provided most of their income. So I mention that just to say that, Berg actually, there were a lot of times in his life when he would have wanted to compose, but had to do other things in order to make money. So he was a student of Arnold Schoenberg, who also Viennese, and perhaps one of the biggest influences on the music of the 20th century. Berg was born in 1885. This is the last piece that Berg finished. He left an unfinished opera and sketches, but the violin concerto is the last piece that he finished before he had a rather untimely death at the age of 50 in 1935. And in fact, the piece is, on one level, it's about death and resurrection, death and transfiguration. Berg got the commission for this piece from the American violinist Louis Krasner, who really wanted one of these. There are three people that we tend to, three composers we call the second Viennese school: Arnold Schoenberg, Alban Berg, and Anton Webern is the other one. And they were the people that worked with what we call 12-tone music. I'll maybe play you a little bit of that to show you what I mean. But there, some of, especially Schoenberg's music, some of it was a little bit cerebral, maybe would be an adjective. He was perhaps known more for his intellect than his beauty. And so Krasner came to Berg, who was a student of Schoenberg's and used a lot of the same ideas and materials that Schoenberg did. But Berg had always, his family had always sung at home. They sang. And so a lot of the first music that Berg wrote was songs. And so I think, almost always when you have the voice in a composer's gestalt, and they tend to, the music just tends to sound nicer. Can't get too cerebral if they're actually thinking about syllables and vocal meaning. So Louis Krasner, the violinist, came to Berg and said, "Look, I really think that you could write a concerto for me that would be so beautiful that it would dispel this sort of, these rumors that all you guys ever do is write cerebral music." So Berg was a bit torn because he needed the money, and he also wanted commissions because he was a composer, and he worked very slowly. So in fact, this was only the second commission that he had ever gotten. So he really wanted to do it. But at the same time, when Louis Krasner came to him in 1934, he was really trying to finish his second opera. And he really wanted to do that too. So for a couple of months after the commission, Berg kind of, he messed around with the concerto, but he was mostly working on his opera. And then a tragic event happened in his life. The Bergs had been good friends with the Mahlers, and Alma Mahler's daughter from one of her successor husbands to Gustav Mahler, Manon Gropius, was 18 years old, and she died suddenly. She had what they called infantile paralysis.
Oh, dear.
And, yeah, so very unexpectedly, very, a kind of an earth-shaking event for the people who knew her well, of which Berg was one. And this inspired him to start working on the concerto for real. I mean, he dedicated it, he called it To the Memory of an Angel, and the piece depicts the life, death, and transfiguration of Manon Gropius. The piece is in two movements, of which they're both divided into two sections, and the first movement is supposed to depict her life, and then the beginning of the second movement is her death. And that's, you know, there are some unpleasant sounds in that part.
So would that be considered a 12-tone composition then because of that?
It is a 12-tone composition because of the material that Berg used. And here, let me show you. What the 12-tone composers did was, instead of the traditional major or minor 8-note scale that we're used to, they took the 12 half steps and arranged them in a certain way and made a scale out of that, which they called a tone row. So they used that as their scalar material. And you can imagine how that would sometimes make things come out rather cerebrally. But what Berg did, which is so brilliant, listen to his row. This is the scale that the piece is based on. So you have all these triads, well, these plain old chords. And they're all a fifth higher than each other, and that is exactly what your traditional music for the previous 500 years was built on. So he has, and perhaps you noticed also his row uses the entire open string category of the violin. In fact, the piece starts with the open strings. Builds from there, but so it almost, you know, when you first hear the beginning, it almost, you think, is the violinist just tuning? Yeah. You hear the open strings. So, so he's developed a scale that allows him to do all the 12-tone traditional type stuff, but also allows him to play, to use very tonal systems. He also uses a couple of what we might call found objects in this piece. One of the, I think for me, maybe the most amazing moment in this piece is about three quarters of the way through it. As I said, the beginning of the second movement depicts the death of Manon, and a lot of that is violin cadenza with very sparse accompaniment. And then what happens is the last four notes of the scale, of the tone row, three whole steps in a row, that is the beginning of a Bach chorale which talks about being prepared to go.
And oh,
it's
my.
It's called Ich habe den Weg. So, it is actually a, it can be used as a requiem, or a pre-requiem. So
he was really drawing from the work of other composers him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He quotes the Bach chorale intermittent with the violin playing it, but when he has the clarinet section play the Bach chorale in Bach's original arrangement, and I mean, it sounds just like an organ when clarinets do that. So it's kind of amazing, yeah. And the other thing that he brings in to the piece is a Corinthian folk song. The Berg's summer home was in the Carinthian Mountains, which are on the edge of Austria. And so they went there.
Aren't they between Austria and Ukraine?
Yeah,
isn't
I
it?
Think,
yes, right.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
The violin does not actually ever play the Corinthian folk tune. It only plays embellishments to it, but it's the folk tune is the words to the folk tune that he chose are actually very bawdy. They're things like, I mean, just one of the verses goes, what do you do when he's Catholic and she's Protestant? No, it must be the other way around. When he's Protestant and she's Catholic, because the other line is, well, she'll forget about the rosary once they're in bed. And it goes on and on like that. And the nickname that's used for the woman in this song is the same nickname that belonged to the girl who was a servant in the Berg household who Alban made pregnant when he was 18.
Oh, my.
And he actually had a natural daughter. She had a daughter, and nobody even knew about this until after Berg's wife died. Berg's wife kept a pretty close lid on the family secrets, actually, but so it's it's relatively recent information. So there is evidence that he did send money at least a couple times for her support, and there's one bit of correspondence they found from when she was an adult. So no one really knows to what extent he kept in touch with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, I mean, you know, the parallels are there. You can see that. I mean, here he's referring to this other young woman besides the monogrebius of the title. And there's actually another, while we're on the subject of women, you know, because I often call this piece Berg and His Women, because there's another woman depicted in here. And that also involves that part of the row that develops the Bach. When you do the, when you use the last four notes in a certain place on the instrument, then you're starting on H and you're finishing on F. H because the German system of music, what we call B flat in America, they call D. And what we call B natural, they call H.
Mm-hmm.
So a B natural is, in German, is an H. And so a lot of times in the piece, he kind of, there are a couple of really big moments when he goes back and forth between H and F. And H and F are the initials of Berg's lover, Hannah Fuchs, who we also didn't know anything about until after Berg's wife died, and people.
So this piece is really very personal.
It is
to his life.
Personal to his life. Yes, it depicts, and I mean, he puts himself in there too. He was interested in numerology. In the teens and twenties in Germany, Vienna, Austria, you know, there was a lot of buzz about numbers, and so he puts his number in the piece. He puts Hannah Fuchs's number in the piece. I mean, I think, you know, that's the really the most important thing about all that. It's an intensely personal piece. It is a really, I think it's really gorgeous. And what it does is it shimmers. I mean, what the 12-tone system does in the hands of a master like Berg is it gives you more possibilities than you're even used to hearing musically. So you just kind of sit on these chords, mm-hmm. and you can hear them wanting to go many different directions, and where they go becomes very satisfying. So I definitely think this is Alban Berg's greatest work. And
it sounds fascinating.
It is a great piece to hear live, too.
Well, now, is there anything in particular that our listeners can listen for when they go to the concert and hear you perform this concerto?
Right. Well, first, I would definitely say, you know, listen for the found objects, which you should be able to hear if we do it well. I think another thing that I is interesting about the piece is it's a fairly big orchestra, a lot of wind instruments in particular, which he uses some of everything, but he uses it very sparsely. But so there are, you know, there'll be a tuba solo, and then there'll be the bass clarinet is very important at the beginning. A lot of the texture is kind of low, which suits the violin well, because the violin can go kind of high, and then the balance isn't too much of an issue. I think really, I would also just say, you know, just close your eyes and listen, because it really shimmers. There will be pre-concert talks, which many people find really helpful in enjoying the piece. There, we always do a pre-concert talk 1 hour before the concert. Here in Reading, the pre-concert talk is in the Cascade. Kyle talks.
So that will be at 6:30 p.m. on November 10th?
That's right.
And then in Chico, the following day, the 11th, would be at 1 p.m. at Laxon Auditorium.
Yeah. We're in Reading on Saturday night? I thought it was the other way around.
I'm sorry. Yes, it is the other way around. Pardon me. The Chico concert is Saturday, November 10th. And so that would be, the pre-concert talk would be at 6:30.
6:30, right. And that pre-concert talk is not on stage, but it's in another building that's very easy to find, and it's there are directions there.
All right.
And then in Reading.
In Reading at 1 p.m. on Sunday, November 11th.
Yes. So that's right. And that'll be up on the Cascade stage. I will be talking then too, and stay tuned for further details, because we have talked about perhaps actually doing special pre-concert talks on Thursday nights before the performance. I get mostly because it's an amazing piece, and it's sometimes at first hearing it's a little overwhelming. So if you have a chance to listen to it or to hear someone speak about it, I think you will really enjoy it more.
Well, our listeners will have that opportunity at the conclusion of this interview, because thanks to you, I do have a recording of the concerto by Alban Berg, and I will be playing that at the conclusion of this interview. So our listeners will have a chance to listen to it, and then, of course, they will have a chance to hear you perform it live in both Chico and Reading. And so for any further information, they should go to the website for the North State Symphony.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go.
Which I believe is northstatesymphony.org.
Sounds right. And if not, you can just Google North State Symphony, and I'm sure
that's
you can
right.
find it.
Yes. All right. Well, is there anything else that you would like to add, Terry, to help our listeners understand this and decide that they're going to come to the concert?
Well, I will just mention the other pieces on the concert. I, much as I love the Berg, it's not the only thing that's happening that night. And we are this concert is presenting Viennese music in various forms. So we're starting with the overture to Die Fledermaus, the opera that Johann Strauss wrote. Which is that's a very fun piece. And then the second half of the concert will be a suite from Der Rosenkavalier, which is by the other Strauss, Richard Strauss. And that's a really gorgeous piece of music too. So what you have is sort of mid-romantic to start with, late romantic on the other end, and Berg kind of ultra late romantic is the filling in the sandwich, so to speak. So I think it's a great way to do it, really, because I think that you will hear after you've listened to the waltzes in the Fledermaus overture, you'll hear waltzes in the Berg. He writes a lot of dances, and then I think the sonorities of the Berg are kind of, you'll hear bits in the Rosenkavalier that you'll think, oh yeah, that's what he was doing. So I think it's really a well-balanced program, and I think there's something for everyone in this concert, really.
It sounds like it's going to be a wonderful program. And thank you so much for joining me on Intermountain Classics this afternoon, Terry. I appreciate very much your coming and talking to us about the Baird Concerto and about the concert with the North State Symphony.
Oh, well, thank you, Tom. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed being here.
And once again, this will be the Violin Concerto by Alban Berg will be performed by the North State Symphony with Terry Bonn as soloist, and that will take place next weekend, Saturday, November 10th, in Chico at 7:30 p.m., and then in Reading, Sunday, November 11th at 2 p.m., and remember, those pre-concert talks will be 1 hour before. The Chico concert is at Laxon Auditorium on the Cal State Chico campus, and the Reading concert will be at the Cascade Theater in downtown Reading. For tickets or further information, you can call 530-898-6692 or go to northstatesymphony.org. Thank you so much for joining me, Terry.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Diskin, and this is Intermountain Classics on Community Radio KKRN 88.5 FM in Round Mountain, your source of news, information, and entertainment for the Redding, Shasta County, and Intermountain region. Thanks for joining me this evening. We've been listening to a replay of an interview with North State Symphony's Concertmaster Terry Bonn about her life, her music, and in particularly the Violin Concerto she performed with the symphony in November of 2012. Alban Berg's Violin Concerto was written in 1935. It's probably Berg's best known and most frequently performed instrumental piece. As you heard during the interview, the concerto stemmed from a commission from violinist Louis Krasner. When he first received the commission, Berg was working on his opera Lulu, and he did not begin work on the concerto for some months. The event that spurred him into writing was the death by polio of 18-year-old Manon Gropius, the daughter of Alma Mahler, once Gustav Mahler's wife, and Walter Gropius. Berg set Lulu to one side to write the concerto, which he dedicated to the memory of an angel. Here now is a recording of the Berg Violin Concerto, subtitled To the Memory of an Angel, in this case performed by the Symphony Orchestra of Montreal, conducted by Charles Dutoit. The violin soloist is Reiko Watanabe. This is the Berg Violin Concerto that Terry talks so much about in the interview.
Thank you.
This is Intermountain Classics on KKRN 88.5 FM, your listener-supported community radio station in Round Mountain. I'm Tom Diskin. Thanks for joining me this evening. We've been listening to The Beautiful and Haunting Violin Concerto by Alban Berg, as performed by the Symphony Orchestra of Montreal, conducted by Charles Dutoit. Violin soloist was Reiko Watanabe. Stay tuned for more music on Intermountain Classics. The second hour of our program features the beautiful DeRozan Cavalier Suite by Richard Strauss.